This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, September 15th, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Iti Agnihotri Madhokar. In a moment, Senator Mark Pryor discusses legislation he says will help green technology be exported from the U.S. while creating jobs here. And Michael Tilley from thecitywire.com talks about yesterday's official opening of the papers of John Paul Hammerschmidt at the University of Arkansas Library.
Support for Ozarks at Large and KUAF is provided by Keels Creek Winery, featuring a variety of both red and white wines using locally grown grapes and artist-themed labels. The winery is located in Eureka Springs and offers a tasting room and regional art gallery. Visitors are welcome. For more information, you can go to the web, keelscreek.com. And this is Ozarks at Large. A great concern for many Americans continues to be unemployment. This month, the president has delivered a jobs plan to a joint session of Congress, while GOP presidential candidates have stressed their thoughts that a new approach to the creation of new jobs is needed. Arkansas Senator Mark Pryor is sponsoring legislation he says would aid in the export of clean technology from the U.S. and, in the process, help make new jobs. Senator Pryor is with me on the phone from Washington. Thank you again for your time.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having me again.
This legislation would create a new program within the Department of Commerce. Is that right?
It would. And there's not very much money involved here, but basically when you look at the U.S. economy, one of our real strengths is clean energy. Turns out we've done a great job in Arkansas with clean energy. We have 448 clean energy businesses in our state, and they employ over 4,000 people. So, you know, this is a great industry for us, but you see this around the country too. And what we need to do is we need to take these products that these folks are making either in Arkansas or around the country, and we need to do a better job of exporting them. And the reason I say that is that we want the U.S. to be number one in clean energy innovation and clean energy businesses. Right now, if you look at the investment that goes into clean energy, we were number one. Once recession hit, we've fallen to number three. China's number one. Germany's number two, we're number three. We want to get back to being on top there. We should be. That's a natural place for us. So what I'm trying to do here is focus on this, get the Department of Commerce to help our companies market this technology around the world, have some pro-growth policies here in the U.S. to try to get more of this going, and also to develop a national clean energy technology strategy. We really don't have that right now. We have some good ideas and different laws and different policies, but we don't really have a good comprehensive strategy. And so this is all in this bill. And again, this doesn't cost much money at all. It really just puts some requirements on the Department of Commerce and others to try to get this done.
One of the more than 400 clean energy businesses that's in Arkansas, one that's developed actually in Fayetteville, is Blue and Green. Have you talked with some of the companies like Blue and Green about what they need?
We have. Blue and Green is actually a very good example of one of these companies. They do a lot of things to improve water quality, and just how they do it and all this is really impressive, and it will save a lot of energy and improve a lot of quality of life. We've talked to them. We've talked to Fort Smith has Mitsubishi that's coming in. They're making windmill turbines, and we have other companies around the state that we've been talking to about what they need, what they see in this U.S. economy and in this Arkansas economy. And one of the things that I think is really missing right now is we need to do a better job with exports. We have a really bad trade deficit, and we need to do more exports, and that does nothing except just get more and more business in the U.S. You know, the more we can export, that just means more jobs, more investments, more business. So yeah, that's good.
What are some of the hurdles that clean tech startups or companies are facing trying to export their technology overseas?
Well, a lot of times these companies are fairly small, like, you know, Blue and Green you mentioned. That's not a very big company, and they don't really have the resources or the wherewithal to necessarily market around the world. But through the Department of Commerce, the Department of Commerce does have that ability. And so what we're trying to do is make sure that these clean energy businesses like that and sort of green businesses like that, that they have a platform there at the U.S. Department of Commerce, whereas commerce is all over the world. I mean, there's commerce, U.S. Department of Commerce offices all over the world, and we market all kinds of U.S. businesses and encourage trade opportunities, et cetera, all over the world. That's a big part of what they do. And we want to just make sure that there's a platform for, you know, companies like Blue and Green there in Fayetteville to market. And it's kind of a way to almost like pool resources and to, you know, tap into something that's already there where they don't have to reinvent the wheel. So that's what we're hoping. And, you know, we're hoping that as these companies get more exposure overseas, that just means more business for our companies and, again, helps the trade deficit, helps create jobs, and just stimulates the economy.
And what is included when you're developing a strategy that would be an umbrella, really, for so many companies inside the United States?
Well, you know, you want to make sure that folks, not just in Washington but around the country, are focused on the right things. For example, if you look at six of the top 30 wind, solar, and advanced battery technologies, they're made in America. Six of the top 30 in the world are made in America. Well, we need that number to be more like, you know, 8, 10, 15 of the top 30 are made in America. So we need to get these companies that have good ideas, that can innovate, that can manufacture, we need to get them engaged and part of this national strategy. So that could be a lot of different things. That could be maybe some tax credits. Again, that could be some import-export type assistance. I mean, there's lots of different pieces of that. It could be some manufacturing assistance that happens from time to time. In fact, there's a story recently about in the Rust Belt, some of the old auto plants and the other heavy manufacturing plants are now being converted into plants that actually make more like cutting-edge green technology, green energy type things, because you have this huge industrial capacity that's just sitting there vacant. You know, it's empty, and you have all this capacity. So, you know, we're trying, and certainly this new style of manufacturing and these new technologies, we need to be making those here in the U.S.
Senator Mark Pryor, thank you as always for your time.
Thank you. It's good talking to you.
This is Ozarks at Large. With me on the phone from his office in Fort Smith is Michael Tilley. He is the editor and publisher of the City Wire that covers business, politics, culture, and more for the Fort Smith region. And Michael, you were just a few blocks from my studio yesterday for the opening of the John Paul Hammerschmidt papers at the Mullins Library on the U of A campus.
Yes. Yes, it was a great event. And I met this very attractive lady there who said that her name is Laura Kellums and that she was your wife, and I just do not believe it. She's entirely too attractive to be married to Kyle Kellums.
Most people don't.
It was a great event. Kyle, in the spirit of full disclosure, as they say, I had the opportunity to be an intern for Hammerschmidt way thousands of years ago. So not only was I covering as a reporter, there was a little bit of a nostalgia involved, and you know, to kind of cover someone who gave me a good break in terms of learning the system. But great event, well attended, a quality crowd, several federal judges, former congressman, Senator Pryor, but you know, when and then Tom Dillard. I think I was most impressed with Mr. Dillard, who's head of special collections there at the library, and his staff. I mean, can you imagine a truck pulling up to your loading dock and offloading 1,500 banker boxes full of file folders and papers and photos? Go make sense of this.
And when you think about the history that's connected to John Paul Hammerschmidt, if you are of a certain age or older, there was a time when it was just known that your third district congressman was going to be John Paul Hammerschmidt. He served
Correct.
Under six different presidents and for many, many years.
Right. And the other story, the Senator Pryor told a great story about, you know, at the last minute, as part of this Republican wave, when Winthrop Rockefeller was, you know, momentum was building for him to be governor, Hammerschmidt decided to run against Mr. Trimble, the congressman then, who's well entrenched. I mean, that was his seat. And we have to, the historical perspective is that was just as much his seat as we became to know that the 3rd District was Hammerschmidt's. And nobody thought, I mean, it was just a long shot. Nobody thought he could win. And, you know, even Senator Pryor said, you know, the conventional wisdom at the time was that, you know, there was no way. There was no way, as Pryor said, on God's green earth that anyone was going to beat Congressman Trimble. But he did it, and he stayed there for 25 years.
And the interesting story is not just his service in Washington, D.C., but he was in the Army Air Corps. He joined in 1942, served with the 3rd Combat Cargo Group in, you know, the China and India Theater, flew missions over the hump, which, if you know much about World War II, you know, was a vital operation.
Right. It's been many years ago, and I forget who the speaker was, but I was at an event, and they were talking about Congressman Hammerschmidt, and they said, you know, if you just stopped at the end of World War II and told his life story, that would be amazing in and of itself. But then, you know, he goes on, he runs a successful lumber company in Harrison, is elected to Congress, and then from there, you know, he's part of the first government trip back to Vietnam. He's, you know, part of the historic peace negotiations between Israel and Egypt in the late 70s. You know, he's been part of airport boards. He was part of the Reagan National Airport Board. I mean, it's just every just about every time you think that there cannot be another accomplishment, something else. I learned something else about him. So just amazing guy.
And the other aspect of this, of course, is who over the next several decades will be coming to Mullins Library to look at these papers, because it's not just necessarily someone who's specifically researching John Paul Hammerschmidt or Arkansas, but because he was in Congress for so long, people who are researching all sorts of other people or other events might be interested in these papers.
Well, correct. And it was a point that Mr. Dillard made, and he was very diplomatically corrected some of the previous speakers who said it would be a great source for U.S. and Arkansas history. And Mr. Dillard recited a list of global things that Hammerschmidt had been a part of, and said it's not just Arkansas and U.S. history, it's world history that you can research through the papers. And Dillard focused in, he thinks that the biggest part of Hammerschmidt's legacy will be Hammerschmidt pushing to preserve the Buffalo River, you know, to make that a national river system, which was the first in the country. And he talked about how much courage it took, you know, because, you know, essentially Hammerschmidt was a Republican who was an environmentalist before we knew there were environmentalists.
Moving to something that has yet to happen, the vote on the 1% prepared food tax in Fort Smith. Forward Fort Smith, an organization that wants to convince people to vote for the prepared food tax, has organized better and I think has gone live with their website?
Yes, Forward Fort Smith has, and this is the issue. This 1% prepared food tax issue, as we said before, just keeps going. I mean, it's like reality TV. You know, you just wonder how long is it going to last. the November 8th election is gearing up. Forward Fort Smith has pushed out a press release trying to provide some information, some details to lobby for the tax. Now, I just talked to Eddie York, who has been kind of the de facto leader of the restaurant group, who's opposed to this. And he says sometime next week or the week after they will organize into some. And he even called it a loose organization just to try to raise a little money and post a few ads to get people to encourage people to oppose it. So November 8th is the election. But, Kyle, I have some sneaky feeling that regardless of the outcome on November 8th, this will continue to be an issue.
Finally, Maria Haley unexpectedly passed away this week, fell ill, brain aneurysm on Friday, and died on Tuesday. Governor Mike Beebe said after her death that most Arkansans will never understand how much she did for the state.
Well, and I think that is probably the statement, if you're thinking about Maria Haley. I mean, not only what she did for the state during this recent service as director of the Arkansas Economic Development Commission, but historically, you know, John McFarland here, the former chairman and president of Baldor, tells a story that back in the early 80s when Baldor was trying to enter the Asian markets, they weren't even there yet, Maria Haley, who was familiar with those markets, spoke those languages, said, look, let me help you. Let me open some doors for you. She even worked a booth for Baldor at an international trade show. And I asked McFarlane, I said, but did she really help you? And he stressed that she really did help them open the doors. And they make tens of millions of dollars in sales now in Asia. And he praised her. He said she was very instrumental in helping Baldor do that. So, in so many ways, through many years, she helped. And here's the issue, Kyle. I don't know how BB replaces someone like Haley. You know, she had experience working in the White House. She's worked with Henry Kissinger and Mac McClarty on global issues. She was active in the Export-Import Bank, which handles trade transactions all over the world. Worked with foreign governments. I mean, those kind of qualifications, those don't come along very often, if ever. And so we certainly benefited from her time, and it's sad, sad, sad to see her pass away.
And I know you are working on a couple of other stories that are going to be on the City Wire later today.
Yes. One about Whirlpool. I think that was, that's one of those issues that some of the last comments that Maria Haley made, by the way, was her concern about both Whirlpool and Mitsubishi, just the economic environment and the legislative environment in Congress, which may affect Mitsubishi. So, but yes, we'll have something on Whirlpool later today and their potential employment change come early January.
Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of the City Wire that covers business, politics, culture, and more in the Fort Smith region. Michael, thank you for your time.
Well, you're welcome, as always.
Earth, sky.
Thursday, September 15th. All around the world tonight, the waning gibbous moon acts as your guide to the brilliant planet Jupiter.
Jupiter is the bright object near tonight's moon. At northerly latitudes, Canada, northern Europe, northern Asia, the moon and Jupiter rise over the eastern horizon in early evening. They rise later as you go farther south on the globe. In Australia, for instance, the moon and Jupiter rise into your eastern sky in late evening tonight.
After they rise in the east, the moon and Jupiter climb upward in the sky. They reach their high point for the night in the wee hours after midnight. As seen throughout the world now, the moon and Jupiter at their highest point in the sky soar as high up as the April noonday sun. You'll find the moon and Jupiter in the west at morning dawn.
Jupiter is by far the brightest star-like object to light up these September nights. This planet ranks as the fourth brightest object in all the heavens, after the sun, moon, and planet Venus.
Jupiter is the biggest planet in our solar system. Its mass, or weight, is more than 300 times that of Earth. Plus, you'd need over 1,000 Earths to equal Jupiter in volume. See this giant world tonight and tomorrow night using the moon as a guide. I'm Deborah Bird.
And I'm Jorge Salazar. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
It is Thursday, September 15th, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Ithi Agnihotri-Mathulkar.
With us in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Becca Bacon-Martin. She is the features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Why does, for some reason, September 15th feels like we ought to pay taxes or something?
You know what? You want to write a check out?
Jump in the middle of that.
Knock yourself out.
Okay. Or we could write a check for tickets to something. How about that instead?
Okay.
The Shrine Circus is tonight at Parsons Stadium in Springdale.
When was the last time you went to a circus?
You know, one of my best friends dragged me to a circus up at Parsons Stadium, except that the wind started to blow. You know, it got real quiet, like the Trout song about it got perfectly still, and it hailed, and we ended up leaving early.
Yeah.
So I may try this again. This features the James Christie Cole Circus, and there are two shows at 4:30 and 7 tonight. $7 for the 4:30 show, $10 to $12 for the later show for adults, and children are free for the 7:30 show.
What sort of stuff will they have under the big top? Do they have acrobats? Do you know?
We saw acrobats and elephants and fire swallowers.
Will they have a net for the acrobats?
The rest of us play without a net. Why should they get one?
I can't go. I can't go if there's not a net.
Makes you too nervous?
When was the last time you went to a circus?
I was probably 8.
Okay.
And there were acrobats there, and it made me very nervous. I could admire what they did, but
don't they have like safety standards? Like,
surely they do.
Oh yeah, they do.
Sounds like some news.
There be a net.
Some news station should do a story on that.
You know, I'm still saying we play without a net all the time, so why worry? Also tonight, a movie called Waiting for Superman.
Oh, I heard about this one.
The film screening and panel discussion talking about basically what's wrong with education.
Actually,
could be a long night.
I had a tad of insomnia last week, and it was on IFC, and I saw part of it.
And what did you think?
It's compelling. It's interesting. Raises some questions.
It happens at 6 o'clock tonight at the Arkansas Union Theater on the university campus in Fayetteville, and it's free. The Shondies play tonight, mm-hmm. New York Popsters. They're back in Fayetteville for a show at the Smoke and Barrel Tavern. And they have a new album coming out called Searchlights. The concert's free and expected to start about 10 o'clock. And Christian metal band, let me say those words together again because it makes me happy. Christian metal band Under Oath is in town tonight for a show at 8 o'clock at Rogue Pizza Company. Tickets are $22 today at ArkansasLiveMusic.com.
That's a lot.
I just love the phrase Christian metal band.
Becca Bacon-Martin is the features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
President Obama is out pushing his jobs bill, and he has dropped that whole complex intellectual argument thing.
Pass this jobs plan. Pass this jobs bill. Pass this jobs bill. Pass
so, following the example of our president, listen to this week's show. I'm Peter Sagal. Listen to this week's show. That's the News Quiz from NPR. And God bless America.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me can be heard Saturday at noon and Sunday morning at 11 on KUAF 91.3 FM. A new election for Cherokee Chief is scheduled September 24th in Tahlequah. This is the second election after the Cherokee Nation Supreme Court invalidated previous results last June due to irregularities. But a new election may be stalled by a federal order issued Tuesday from the Department of Interior to allow so-called Cherokee freedmen, descendants of both Cherokee and African slaves, the right to vote. Jacqueline Froelich explains.
On August 22nd, the Cherokee Supreme Court decided to terminate all Cherokee freedmen's citizenship rights and benefits. The freedmen have for years battled with the Cherokee Nation for tribal recognition in both tribal and federal court. The Cherokee, prior to the Civil War and forced relocation from their land base in the southeastern United States to Oklahoma, operated a slave-based economy. Once emancipated, certain blacks remained with the tribe and would come to be identified as Cherokee freedmen, tracing back to the Dawes Rolls, a federal census of Cherokee taken circa 1900. Marilyn Van is a lead plaintiff. She's black, Cherokee, Choctaw, and Chickasaw. She points to the Treaty of 1866, which granted freedmen Cherokee status.
Well, the treaty language says that those free blacks, which were mixed African Indian people, pretty much, as well as those freed slaves who, various ancestry, who were living legitimately in the tribal nation in 1861, either as a free black or a slave, would have all the rights of Native Cherokee, including voting, holding office, that sort of thing like this. So this is the agreement that was signed back in 1866.
Larry Echohawk, Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs in the Department of the Interior, in his order Tuesday, cited the treaty to Acting Cherokee Chief S. Joe Crittenden, saying abrogating freedmen rights is unconstitutional and that the tribe must reinstate full rights of citizenship.
Well, certainly so. When the U.S. government, you know, which has plenary power over Indian tribes, more or less states that the freedmen people, that, you know, the treaty is valid and is opposed to the tribal government, conducting elections without freedom and participation, certainly that's wonderful. You know, after all, the U.S. government is a signer to the treaty.
Marilyn Van says she does plan on voting in the upcoming tribal elections for Cherokee Chief, although she would not say for whom. She did say incumbent Chief Chad Smith is not a friend of the freedmen. Case in point, in 2006, he disbanded the Judicial Appeals Tribunal, Cherokee's highest court, after it ruled the Cherokee freedmen were entitled to citizenship. Van said Smith's opponent, Bill John Baker, does not support freedmen's rights either. But then, nor do a majority of Cherokee voters, who in 2007 had 74% voting to strip freedmen and other non-Indians of their Cherokee citizenship. But 3 years later, in 2010, the D.C. Court of Appeals held that freedmen were granted citizenship under that treaty of 1866.
Freedmen people, we would like for the U.S. government to protect our rights is because the treaty of 1866, it says that the tribe passes unjust laws. The freedmen have the right to appeal to the president of the United States. And, of course, now if you appeal to the president, you do that through, you know, your departments, you know, your Department of Interior or Justice or such as that, you know, who do the administrative functions, you know, on behalf of the president. So, yes, you know, we definitely want the U.S. government to protect the freedmen people's rights.
In its order issued Tuesday, the federal government said unless freedmen are allowed to vote, the pending election for tribal chief won't be valid. The Cherokee freedmen filed a preliminary injunction earlier this month asking the federal court for relief in the matter, with the hearing set for September 20th, 4 days before the election. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
This is Ozarks at Large. The director of court security and emergency preparedness for the Arkansas court system says many of the state's historic courthouses remain unsecured. Ron Breeding from our content partner KUAR in Little Rock has this report on the fallout from this week's Crawford County courthouse shooting that took place in Van Buren.
Court Security Director Pete Hollingsworth says the Van Buren courthouse had six wide-open entrances with metal detectors posted only at the doors to the two courtrooms. And while that may not be optimal, Hollingsworth says lots of other courthouses are even worse.
I'm confident in saying that over half of our facilities where court proceedings are held either have a metal detector into the building or into the courtroom.
In other words, nearly half of all courtrooms are unsecured. Hollingsworth says there are best practices for court security, but no mandatory standards. And while the state has helped counties purchase metal detectors and other equipment, there is no ongoing help to pay the salaries of officers to man such equipment.
We may have 70% of all the courthouses have access to metal detectors. But I don't think that high of a number are able to use their metal detector on a regular basis due to the lack of manpower. And that is a funding issue.
The Crawford County judge is shutting down all but one of the Van Buren courthouse's entrances and plans to ask the sheriff to provide deputies to guard that one entrance.
Ron Breeding from our content partner KUAR in Little Rock filed that story.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Jody Beznoska. She is the Vice President for Communications at Walton Arts Center.
Hello.
Hello. Busy, busy over there.
Oh, it's busy, but it's fun.
Yeah?
It's fun. We are getting ready to sort of finish up September. We got Sona coming on real soon, but I wanted to make sure to remind everybody that don't forget about Boeing Boeing, which is the Theater Squared performance that is running for two more weekends, I believe, this weekend and next weekend. I finally saw it. It's funny. It's a lot of fun. It's fast-paced. You're going to laugh a lot. If you need that little break, do it. It's really something. And that's in the Nadine Baum Studios at Walton Arts Center. I believe that's this weekend, and then it will close next weekend. So you're running out of time to get to see it. And then tomorrow night on Friday, James Galea will be in Star Theater. As I mentioned before, the show is sold out. So if you're really into Australian magic, what you can do is you can come down to the box office and you can get on standby. And if any tickets come open or if anybody, you know, calls us and says they can't come, then we'll try to get you in as much as we can. So the options are to come down and hang out with us for a little bit and see if you can get in to see the show. So that is tomorrow night. That's Friday. And I wanted to give just a quick announcement that Sona, which we'll talk a little bit more about immediately, they are having auditions for a choral group. And they've had one set of auditions already, and the second set is Saturday morning at – or Saturday afternoon, I believe, at 1 o'clock. And if you want to get more information about how to join this, they're called the Sona Singers, very high-level group that's going to sing with Sona over the course of the year. You can go to sonamusic.org. That's their website, and you can hear information or see information about their auditions. So speaking of them
– Yes, Monday night.
Monday night. We have been waiting for this. They will be performing the first concert in their – inaugural season, and it's called a Masterworks Concert. So it features three pieces. The first piece is the overture to The Marriage of Figaro. It's placed first in the concert, so it would feel like the overture if it were being played as part of the opera. And that, of course, you recognize that piece. It's high energy, it's very familiar, but it's wonderful. It has that. It's really going to set the day, the evening off with a bang, I think. And then we will have the Elgar piece, the second piece, featuring a young cellist who is just at the top of his game. This piece is influenced by the British music, and so you're gonna feel very connected to the idea of it.
And tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, the piece explained a little bit more.
Great.
In the shadow of World War I and not met with universal acclaim on its first performance, but now it is seen as one of the best cello concertos ever written.
Isn't that great? Isn't that interesting how that changes? That happens a lot of time with some of these pieces that are so important to the classical canon right now. They were often not popular, or they were controversial when they were first written. And now we love them, and now we think they're, you know, emblematic of what the music should be.
They were ahead of their time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like most good music today. Right. It's a similar thing. You know, I don't think a lot of people realize often that classical music, the way we think of it now, was the rock music of its day.
Well, when you think, you know, Fort Smith Symphony is doing Stravinsky's Rite of Spring in October. That's another one that was the early part of last century. Mm-hmm. It was contemporary music less than 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it was controversial.
Yes.
And it had a lot of, you know, discussion around it, just like great music does today. So I love that. I love that parallel. And then, of course, we'll have the Pathetique Symphony from Tchaikovsky, which was his final work, full of great emotion, those sweeping sounds. And, of course, I would be remiss if I didn't remind everybody that this is Paul Haas. So I know he talked about this with you quite a bit. He loves to surprise you. He loves to put little pieces of music in there, are little moments that are not on the program, that you're not going to expect, but that he's really thought about to help tie the show together. So we are just so excited for this show. This is 7:30 Monday night in Baumwalker Hall. There will be a creative conversation before the show with Paul, the music director, and Peter Lane, Walton Arts Center CEO. That'll be at 6:45 in Star Theater. That's free, so anyone can come to that. And you go to that, you learn a little bit about the concert, you hear from Paul, and then you walk in and you see the show. It's going to be a great night. So that is Monday at 7:30. And I wanted to also remind everybody that we have another company in residence at the Arts Center, and that's the Northwest Arkansas Community Creative Center. Mm-hmm. And they have a whole host of visual arts classes that have kicked off over the last week or so. And I really urge you all, if you're interested in pottery or drawing or mosaics or any kind of sort of tactical classes, both for you and for your kids, go check out their website, because they have a huge lineup. And those classes are all kicking off over this week and the next week. So you can find that at they are Northwest Arkansas Community Creative Center. So then moving ahead to the 25th of September, this one is not on our calendar. In fact, this one is on the Fayetteville Public Library's calendar. We've talked a lot about the 10x10 art series. This is the series of concerts that we bring here with $10 tickets for some really high quality fine arts programs. And our first one will be the Emerson String Quartet, and that's in October. But in advance of that, we've partnered with the library, and we are really excited about this, to do what we're calling the 10 by 10 Countdown Conversation Series. And so at 2 o'clock on the 25th of September, we'll have two guests at the library in the Walker Room, and they will do a discussion about the Emerson String Quartet and the music that they're going to play. So this is free. It's open to the public, and it features Laura Goodwin, who is Walton Arts Center's VP of Learning and Engagement, and also a professor of music from the university, Martin Nedball. And they will be talking about Haydn and Beethoven and the Emerson String Quartet and its role in music, and it's going to be fun, and it's free. So it's a great way to learn a little more about that particular
sort of pregame.
Yeah. Little pregame, little preview, little chance to, if you like to learn more about the art form and you want to hear about, you know, why composers were writing what they were writing and how this music is picked and why the Emerson String Quartet has risen to such prominence, that'd be a great thing to go to. So that's 2 o'clock on the 25th, free at the Fayetteville Public Library. Then we move into the end of September. Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue will be here before you know it. We'll have two shows out at the Amp during that, Candlebox on the 29th and Jamie Johnson on the 30th. And then October. October. We'll go through Halloween and we'll get into October. All kinds of wonderful music.
No. Yeah. We get into Halloween at the end of October.
Oh, you're right. We get Halloween at the end of October.
I mean, I don't know what you guys did in New England, but here we...
I'm rushing myself. I was thinking about Halloween the other day because Halloween has already cropped up in the stores. I'm seeing costumes and I'm going, oh, man, I'm not ready. But we will have, at the beginning of October, lots of concerts with the University Music Department, some great stuff happening. And then Martha Graham will be here on the 6th, Martha Graham won't, but her company will be here on the 6th. And then on the 7th of October, we will have a wonderful Canadian folk group called Dala playing in Star Theater. And we'll talk lots more about them, but they're terrific. Need to Breathe will be at the Amp that same night, the 7th. And then Emerson String Quartet, as I mentioned, on the 9th. So we're off and running.
Then Halloween, then November. But we can save that for another time.
We can wait. I'm going to calm myself down now.
Jody Vesnaska is the Vice President of Communications and official holiday calculator for Walton Arts Center.
Don't listen to me if you want to, you know, slow time down a little bit.
Thanks, Jody. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellens. With me is Dr. Rosalie Walker-Russell. She's Executive Director of the University of Arkansas Fort Smith Academy of the Arts. The last time you were here in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, we were telling people about early September auditions and deadlines.
Yes.
Here's the good news. If you're a procrastinator.
Which we hope you're not.
Right. Or just got caught up with other things.
Yes.
There are still chances for the young people you know to get involved in ensembles.
That's correct. And we have a parent call us almost every day going, oh, is it too late to get my child in this? We really meant to do this sooner. And so.
Oh, and there's nothing worse. It's one thing if you forget a deadline that affects you.
Yes.
But if you've forgotten one that affects your
child and you really want in and your child really wants in. Mm-hmm. So that is good news. So let's see where to begin. Let's start with Saturday, September 17th, and September 24th is the final for auditioning and enrolling in Youth Honors Orchestra, which is full strings, winds, brass, percussion. It's a full-scale symphonic orchestra for youth from all over this region, and it's the only symphonic orchestra in the Fort Smith area of its kind, and we feel like it's just a great fit. That meets at 10 o'clock every Saturday morning in the Eccles Building, so Saturday, September 17th, time to get there. You can audition, play just a short excerpt of music for our director, and we will place you in the orchestra in the appropriate spot, and you can also participate in wind ensemble if you're a wind, brass, or percussion player. We are taking students in that day as well for that ensemble. Saturday the 24th is absolutely the final day that we will add students to our music ensembles.
So if you've missed the 24th,
let's wait till let's enroll in the spring semester.
Gotcha.
Yes, which we will start doing in early October. So no problem there.
Okay.
Then we'll back up to Wednesday, September 14th. If there are any spots left, we will continue to audition students for our new teen vocal jazz, the Glee Club, which is a 16-member ensemble of sopranos, altos, tenors, and basses from grades 8 through 12. And that will be accompanied by a live band. They'll be singing a lot of vocal jazz. That group auditions at 5:30 on Wednesday, September 14th, and at the latest Wednesday, September 21st. Also on September 14th, if you are a child, grades 3 through 6, show choir meets that day at 4 o'clock, and that's our children's singing and dancing group. If you're in children's choir and enrolled in children's choir either on the 12th or you're enrolling in children's choir on Monday the 19th, you can get in show choir, which meets on Wednesdays, either on September 14th or September 21st, and that's a 4 o'clock time. Children's choir is a 4 o'clock time, so we would love to have those students involved.
We're throwing a lot of times and dates out there.
Yes.
All of this information at the website.
Yes, or call 479-788-7252. Website is uaffs.edu/academy, and all you have to do is go download registration forms. It'll show the start date, but just remember we take students through the month of September in our instrumental and vocal choral ensembles. So we'd love to have you. And we take students periodically through the semester for private music lessons and just prorate the tuition.
On Saturday the 17th, I mean, you've got Youth Honors Orchestra going on with auditions. You've got the Wind Ensemble. You've got the Musical Theater Workshop.
Yes, we have Musical Theater Workshop.
This is all going on the 17th.
That's right, and we didn't talk about Musical Theater Workshop. That's for students grades 8 through 12 that really want to get a background, some study in musical theater, which will involve studying voice, you know, musical theater voice, which is special, quite different from singing opera or, you know, the art song, classical voice. Musical theater voice is a creature all its own, and we study that, and we study choreography for theater, and we study acting for musical theater. And all that takes place in that musical theater workshop class, which meets weekly on Saturdays at 3 o'clock in the afternoon for an hour. And the high school kids can come at 2 o'clock and do their audition, high school audition preparatory class. So it's just a great fit.
Now, let's see, have we covered everything that people can...
Yes, I think so. Most classes started at the beginning of late August, early September. It's all of our musical ensembles. Our junior high chorale, we're enrolling students through September, and that meets on Monday evenings. I think that might be the only other thing we didn't mention.
And the reason I say, because I want to move on to... If you are not young enough to enroll,
okay,
you can still participate because there are things you can see and hear.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Coming up in October is our Distinguished Artist Series, and that's our professional concert series. October 25th, the University of Missouri-Kansas City Conservatory Dance Company is coming, and they're going to perform a night of hip-hop, jazz, ballet, you know, all the various dance styles. It should be a high-energy night, 20-member company coming. The conservatory, the Kansas City Conservatory, of course, that's where I went to school. They have an incredible dance program, so their dance team is going to be outstanding. That's a 7:30 performance at the Breedlove Auditorium Friday night, October 25th. Yes.
And you do not have to be connected to the Academy to buy tickets or anything like that.
That's correct.
It's open to the public.
Tickets are on sale at the box office, 479-788-7300. And I misspoke. It is Tuesday evening, October 25th.
But it is the 25th.
It is right. The 25th. And tickets are already on sale. Then our other concert for the Distinguished Artist Series, because you can get season tickets for this, is Friday night, February 10th. And that's our big Valentine special with the Singing Men of Arkansas, who are based here in Northwest Arkansas. Mr. Mike Bedford is the conductor. That's an incredible group. I mean, they are an amazing group of singers. They're coming to do a Valentine special, and we will be having guests performing with them. So that's a 7:30 concert in February, and tickets are on sale for that now as well.
And then the young people who are you're enrolling and doing things, they're going to have Annie Jr.
Yes.
In the fall, there's High School Musical Jr. which...
That's coming in the spring. That's coming in May. Our theater performances by our Academy students, both the Children's Theater and the Teenage Theater Company, are in November, I believe 11, 12, 13, right around that weekend. And then again in May, they do shows. This fall, they do Annie Jr. and Thoroughly Modern Millie Jr., both great shows, fully staged costume by these 30-member, 40-member theater companies. Annie is now a 40-member theater company. Our children's theater is just all the rage. And then in the spring, they'll be doing High School Musical Jr. and Oklahoma. So tickets are on sale for all of that as well.
Oklahoma doesn't have a junior behind it, so is it
it's the full-scale 2-hour show.
Wow.
Yeah, that'll be a big, big show. We're excited to be doing that show. So,
well, you're right next to Oklahoma, too.
I know it, and it's just a fun one.
Yeah. All right, so any more information, uafortsmith.edu/academy.
Tickets are at uafs.edu. You can order tickets for all these shows or 479-788-7300. And then uafs.edu/academy or 479-788-7252 will get you to the Academy hotline.
All right.
All right. Great.
Well, break whatever is good luck for all of those performers.
Oh, I think it's going to be a great fall. We're excited.
Dr. Rosalie Walker-Russell is the Executive Director at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith Academy of the Arts.
This is Ozarks at Large, and it's time for our giveaway question now, which is a sort of a surprise for me and you.
Well, I know what the question is. You do not.
Well, our listeners.
Yes. Oh, yes. Very good. Yes. And the winner today will receive a Roots Festival t-shirt, the Roots Festival, which was a couple weeks ago.
Which is very cool.
And the t-shirt lists every band that was there. You'll get that plus 2 Malco movie passes.
That's always nice.
Yes. So you can see a movie in your brand new t-shirt this weekend. All correct answers to today's question will be put into the ceramic cow. One will be pulled, and that will be the winner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the University of Ozark soccer teams will travel from Clarksville to Pineville, Louisiana today to take on Louisiana College, both the men and the women's soccer teams from the University of the Ozarks. Pineville, Louisiana is also home to the Louisiana Maneuvers Museum. Now, you used to live in Louisiana.
I did.
You were not born in Louisiana. You're not a native.
Which is such a surprise.
It is. But you got your master's?
Yes, my master's.
At Louisiana Lafayette?
Yes.
All right.
Cajuns.
Now, are you familiar with the Louisiana Maneuvers Museum?
Nope.
Okay. The Louisiana Maneuvers Museum in Pineville, Louisiana is dedicated to one of three things. So I want you to tell me which of the three it's dedicated to. Is the Louisiana Maneuvers Museum dedicated to the preparation that went into Lewis and Clark getting ready to explore the land that was bought in the Louisiana Purchase? Is the Louisiana Maneuvers Museum in Pineville, Louisiana dedicated to the preparation Dwight Eisenhower put into World War II, the American effort to World War II? Or is the Louisiana Maneuvers Museum dedicated to the preparation work that went into building the interstate system?
Obviously, I did not read enough books on Louisiana history when I was in the States, so yeah.
If you think you have an answer, or just a guess, you can call
800-522-KUAF.
That's 800-522-5823.
Yes.
All right. So again, Louisiana Purchase preparation for World War II maneuvers, or the preparation for work on the interstate system.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 15th of September, 2011. It's the birthday of the man who wrote, "We promise according to our hopes, we fulfill according to our fears." François VI, the Duc de La Rochefoucauld, born in 1613, and famous to us for his maxims, his epigrams, including, "There are good marriages, but no delicious ones." It's the birthday of the first true American novelist, James Fenimore Cooper, born Burlington, New Jersey, 1789, the 11th of 12 children. When he was just a baby, the family moved to the wilderness of upstate New York, and he ran wild in the woods with his many, many siblings. Went to Yale, where he was thrown out of school for making a donkey sit in his professor's chair. best remembered today for the Leatherstocking Tales, novels about the frontiersman Natty Bumppo, including The Last of the Mohicans. It's the birthday of the humorist and drama critic Robert Benchley, 1889, born Worcester, Massachusetts. When he was 9 years old, his older brother Edmund was killed in the Spanish-American War, and his mother cried out, "Why couldn't it have been Robert?" Robert Benchley became managing editor at Vanity Fair in 1919, and that's when he met Dorothy Parker. They became close friends, went off to Life magazine and then to The New Yorker, and then to Hollywood, where he wrote and acted in several short films with his monologues. He was a heavy drinker who died in 1945 of cirrhosis of the liver. Robert Benchley, who said there are two kinds of people in the world, those who believe there are two kinds of people in the world and those who don't. It's the birthday of Agatha Christie, the mystery writer, born in England, in Torquay, in 1890. During the World Wars, she worked at a hospital dispensary, which gave her a knowledge of pharmaceuticals and poisons that she used well in her murder mysteries, including Murder on the Orient Express, Death on the Nile, and her play The Mousetrap. She was married to the archaeologist Sir Max Mallowan. Agatha Christie, who once said, "An archaeologist is the best husband a woman can have. The older she gets, the more interested he is in her." And it's the birthday of the Nigerian novelist Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, born in Enugu, 1977, author of two novels, Purple Hibiscus and Half of a Yellow Sun, often writing about the Nigerian-Biafran War of the late 1960s. Here's a poem for today by Hayden Carruth. "They Accuse Me of Not Talking." North people known for silence, long dark of winter, Norland families go months without talking, Eskimos also, except bursts of sporadic, eerie song. South people different, right and wrong, all crystal there, and they squabble, no fears, though they praise North silence. "Ho," they say, "look at them deep thinkers, them strong philosophical types, men of peace." But take notice, please, of what happens. Winter on the brain. You're literate, so words are what you feel. Then you're struck dumb. To which love can you speak the words that mean dying and going insane and the relentless futility of the real? A poem by Hayden Carruth, "They Accuse Me of Not Talking," from his collected shorter poems published by Copper Canyon Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine. You can read the current issue of Poetry or listen to the monthly editor's podcast at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vedder. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time to answer the question, which was, what is the Louisiana Maneuvers Museum dedicated to? The proper answer, the correct answer, the preparation for World War II maneuvers under the direction of Dwight Eisenhower. That's in Pineville, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. And our winner today wins two passes to the Malco Movie Theater and a T-shirt, a Fayetteville Roots T-shirt.
From the Fayetteville Roots Festival, which was held earlier or late last month. And tomorrow, we'll be giving away two tickets to the Banff Film Festival World Tour just off the square in Fayetteville.
Mm-hmm.
As of this morning, there were fewer than two dozen tickets left.
Yes.
So I'm thinking by the time we give it away tomorrow,
this might be the only pair left.
Right. So be listening. Support for Ozarks at Large comes from SONA, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, which begins its inaugural season Monday, September 19th at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. Music director Paul Haas and musicians will present a five-concert classical and pops music series through the upcoming season. Subscriptions and individual tickets at 443-5600 or waltonartscenter.org.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Springdale, Rogers, Bethel Heights, your NPR affiliate for the past 26 years.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Iti Agnihotri Motholkar.
Thank you for listening. Have a great Thursday.